Okay, let's unpack this. We're diving deep today into something that feels like it's absolutely everywhere: microplastics.
Really does.
You hear about them in the oceans, soil, even the air, or drinking water. And according to the material we're exploring for this deep dive, they're really framed as the central problem with plastics today.
And the heart of that problem, based on these sources, is really persistence. Conventional plastic, it fragments, sure.
Right, from sunlight, wear and tear.
Exactly. But it doesn't truly disappear because those long molecular chains, that high molecular weight, well, nature's microbes just can't easily break them down.
They can't biodegrade them effectively.
No. So you end up with these persistent fragments, microplastics, they just hang around.
Right. And the sources, they really highlight something crucial here. The usual solutions we talk about: reduce, reuse, recycle, even really good waste management.
Which are all essential, definitely.
Absolutely essential, but the sources say they aren't enough for all the plastic that, well, inevitably escapes into the environment.
That's the key point. Escaped plastic.
Think about it, like once a plastic bag is blowing down the street or gets washed into a river,
Yeah, you can't realistically collect all of that for recycling, or composting for that matter.
it's just out there.
That's the blind spot these sources are pointing to, this chunk of plastic that gets away, and our current systems don't really have an answer for it once it's loose in the environment.
And that, according to our source material, is exactly the gap this D2W technology was designed to fill. It's presented not as like a replacement for recycling,
No, not all.
but as a specific solution, a potential one, for that escaped plastic problem.
Exactly. Its position is a failsafe. The idea isn't that we want plastic ending up in nature.
Of course not.
But if it does escape collection systems, this technology aims to make sure it doesn't just sit there for decades as persistent microplastic.
Okay, so how?
It's designed to basically dismantle those molecular chains. So the material fundamentally changes, it's no longer a plastic, and then it can be processed by naturally occurring microorganisms, biodegraded.
Got it. So for this deep dive, we've got quite a bit of material. There's a detailed statement on microplastics and D2W, findings from studies, reports.
Yeah, from some significant bodies, the European Chemicals Agency, ECHA, ANSI, Intertek, the Oxymar project in France.
So our mission here is really to unpack this problem of persistent microplastics from escaped plastic and understand, based only on these sources, mind you, how this specific technology, D2W, is proposed to tackle that stream of plastic that gets away.
Let's do it. Where do we start? The scale of the problem.
Yeah, let's start there. How much plastic is escaping? Where does it end up?
Well, the sources really hammer home just how pervasive it is. It's not an exaggeration to say microplastics are found everywhere: land, sea, air, drinking water.
Everywhere.
There's this example from Switzerland in one report, even with their, famously efficient waste management.
Top notch.
Right. They estimate about 14,000 tons of plastics still end up in their soil and waters every year.
Wow, 14,000 tons. And that's not just litter.
No, it's a mix. Some is improper disposal, sure. But a lot is from abrasion things, just wearing down decomposition of larger items.
Like plastic sheeting in agriculture, maybe?
Could be. And the sources explain how ordinary plastic gets brittle from sunlight and physical stress, causing it to fragment. They mention other sources too, like fibers from textiles, even some lost during recycling processes.
But they do clarify vehicle tires, for instance, that's rubber wear, not plastic fragments in this specific context.
Right, important distinction. But the key takeaway, repeated in the sources, is that while improving recycling and waste collection is vital, absolutely critical,
We need to do that.
we have to. But it's fundamentally insufficient for the plastic that has already escaped or will escape into that open environment.
Because once it's scattered across a field or floating in the ocean.
You just can't realistically gather it all back up. It's not feasible for a circular economy loop at that point.
And the sources are also careful to distinguish this from, say, compostable plastics.
Very careful. They point out that compostable plastics need collection and specific conditions, the kind you find in industrial composting facilities, to break down properly.
Not just lying in a ditch or floating in the sea.
Exactly. They aren't designed for reliable biodegradation out there in the wild, with variable temperatures and moisture. The source material even kind of questions the whole point of putting any plastic into composting streams.
Okay, so inescapable reality. Plastic gets out, we can't easily get it back. That really frames the why for D2W, according to these sources. It's aimed squarely at that blind spot.
Yes, the source states very clearly. DTW plastic is not intended to end up in nature. That's not the goal.
The goal is still collection, disposal, recycling if possible.
Absolutely. But the technology is there as a fail-safe. It's designed so that if a piece of DTW plastic does escape at the end of its life, it won't just accumulate for decades. It's designed to break down and biodegrade.
And importantly, they say it can be recycled if it's collected during its useful life, like a normal plastic.
Yes, if it's collected within its service life, before the degradation process really kicks in, it can go into recycling streams with conventional plastics.
Now, here's a fascinating bit from the source's The Origin Story. This wasn't cooked up by a marketing department recently?
No, the sources trace it back 50 years to polymer scientists like Professor Gerald Scott. They apparently foresaw that the very durability of plastic could become a major environmental problem down the line.
Wow, 50 years ago.
Yeah. And Professor Scott's published work, which the sources cite, showed that adding this type of master batch to standard plastics like PE and PP would make them degrade and then biodegrade much, much faster in the open environment compared to ordinary versions.
Leaving no persistent fragments or toxicity behind.
That was the finding. The sources even suggest that if this had been adopted widely back then, maybe the scale of the plastic pollution problem we face today might look different.
Okay, so let's get into the nuts and bolts. How does this oxo-biodegradation process, the D2W version, actually work, according to the sources?
Okay, so the core idea is you take a conventional plastic like polyethylene or polypropylene, PE or PP,
right,
and you add a very small amount of a special master batch.
An additive.
Right. And this master batch contains a catalyst, usually a metal salt like manganese or iron, along with some stabilizers that control the start of the process.
And this catalyst is the key ingredient.
It's crucial. It dramatically speeds up the first stage, which is oxidative degradation. And here's a really critical point they make. The catalyst means the process is not solely dependent on UV sunlight to get going.
Ah, okay. Ordinary plastic needs sun to start breaking down significantly, right?
Often, yes. But with this catalyst, the oxidation can continue even in the dark, or if the plastic gets buried in soil or covered by algae in the sea.
That seems like a major difference.
It is. It means the degradation isn't halted just because it's out of the sun.
Okay, so the catalyst kicks off oxidation even in the dark. What happens then? The plastic starts breaking apart.
Yes. This oxidation process causes what's called chain scission. It breaks the long molecular chains of the polymer into much shorter lengths.
And that lowers the molecular weight.
Significantly. The sources point to specific studies, like one by Intertek, that measured this. They found the molecular weight dropped way down.
Why is getting that molecular weight down so important? What does that actually do?
This is the absolute key, according to the sources. Once the molecular weight falls below a certain threshold, Intertek found it well under 5,000 Daltons for the PE and PP. They tested. The material undergoes a fundamental transformation.
It's not just smaller bits of the same plastic.
No, that's the point. It ceases to be a plastic in the conventional sense. It becomes hydrophilic, meaning it attracts water, interacts with water differently, and this change makes it recognizable and accessible to naturally occurring microbes, like bacteria and fungi.
Ah, so that's how the microbes get involved. The low molecular weight, water-loving material is something they can actually work on.
Exactly. They can then bioassimilate it. Essentially, they consume these smaller oxygenated molecules and use them as food, converting them into carbon dioxide, water, and biomass natural harmless substances. That's the biodegradation part.
So it's a two-stage process. Oxidation first, then biodegradation.
Yes. And Professor Ignacy Jakubowicz, who's cited in the source material, really emphasizes this. He says it's not just fragmentation into tiny plastic pieces. It's a complete change in the chemical structure from these long-chain, high-molecular-weight polymers to low-molecular-weight, oxygen-containing molecules that are bioassimilable by microbes.
Okay, what about the speed? How much faster does this happen compared to just leaving regular plastic out there?
Significantly faster, based on the study cited. Queen Mary University, for instance, found it could be up to 90 times faster than conventional plastic under the same conditions.
90 times?
Yeah, though the exact time always depends on the specific environment. Heat, moisture levels, the amount and type of microbial life present, and the formulation of the plastic itself.
Sure, makes sense.
But the core message from the sources is that it's many, many times faster than ordinary plastic breaking down. And crucially, it leads to complete biodegradation, not just fragmentation into persistent microplastics. They also note that once the material is no longer technically a plastic, the precise time it takes to fully biodegrade isn't as critical as the fact that it is biodegradable and non-persistent.
Mm.
It's different from, say, composting standards that demand breakdown within a strict time frame, like 180 days, in very specific managed conditions.
Right, because the open environment is much more variable. This brings us neatly to definitions and standards, which the source material seems quite focused on clarifying. It comes back to this idea of persistence, doesn't it?
It really does. The sources cite bodies like the European Chemicals Agency, ECHA, and the Dutch RIVM, who apparently define the problem with microplastics as their persistence, the fact they hang around for so long.
So from that perspective, if a fragment is biodegradable, it's not persistent.
Then it's not considered a problematic microplastic in the same way. Persistence is the harmful characteristic they're targeting.
And this is where that distinction between oxo-degradation and oxo-biodegradation becomes absolutely vital, yes.
Critical. The sources lean on definitions from CENTR15351 to spell this out. Oxo-degradation is what happens to ordinary plastic. Oxidation breaks it into smaller bits, but the molecular weight stays too high for microbes to readily biodegrade it, so you get persistent microplastics.
Right.
Oxo-biodegradation, the DTW type, involves both the oxidative breakdown and then subsequent bioassimilation by microbes. The key is that the oxidation stage is specifically designed, thanks to the catalyst, to lower the molecular weight sufficiently for that second biological stage to happen effectively.
Got it. And there are different testing standards for these different outcomes, particularly for the open environment.
Yes. The sources specifically mention standards like ASTM D6954 and BS8472. These are designed to test plastics that claim to biodegrade in the open environment as a result of oxidation followed by microbial action.
And these are different from composting standards.
Completely different, they emphasize. Standards like ASTM D6400 or EN13432 are for industrial composting conditions, high temperatures, managed microbes, specific humidity. They say those standards are simply not relevant for evaluating what happened to a plastic bag littered on a beach or buried in soil.
Okay, that clarification seems important to the argument. So what specific evidence do the sources present to support these claims about D2W? They mentioned several studies.
Yeah, they list quite a few. A major one is the OxoMar project, which was funded by the French government and ran for 4 years.
What did it find?
It specifically looked at oxo-biodegradable plastics in seawater. The conclusion, according to the source, was that they did biodegrade efficiently, significantly more so than conventional plastics under the same marine conditions. They noted the level of oxidation achieved was key.
Interesting. What about ECHA, the European Chemicals Agency?
Well, ECHA held a call for evidence. After reviewing the submissions, the source states that ECHA advised they were not convinced that this type of oxo-biodegradable plastic creates microplastics.
Not convinced it creates them.
Correct. The source also adds that the European Commission terminated that study before ECHA reached a final conclusion and makes the strong claim that there is currently no evidence whatsoever that microplastics originating from this specific type of oxo-biodegradable plastic have ever been found accumulating in the environment.
Okay. And ANSI, the American National Standards Institute.
The sources cite an ANSI article from March 2024. It apparently states quite clearly that oxo-biodegradable technology, the D2W type, prevents the future accumulation of escaped plastic waste and is a solution for litter.
Pretty direct statement.
Yes. It also highlights that it's recyclable and doesn't release methane during breakdown, unlike some other types of biodegradable plastics under certain conditions. And critically, it contrasts it sharply with conventional oxo-degradable plastic, the kind without effective biodegradation, which it says does just create harmful, persistent microplastics. It confirms testing is done using ASTM D6954-24, covering degradation, biodegradation, and importantly, ecotoxicity.
Ensuring it's safe for the environment. What about the Intertech study? You mentioned it earlier regarding molecular weight.
Yes, that was a recent detailed assessment finished in 2025 using the ASTM D6954 standard framework. Tier 1 confirmed the photodegradation significantly dropped the molecular weight well below that 5,000 Dalton level for both PE and PP.
Okay.
Then Tier 2 tested the biodegradability of those degraded residues using controlled composting conditions as specified in the standard for measuring the inherent biodegradability. They found really high levels, over 94% biodegradation for the polyethylene sample and over 92% for polypropylene within the test period.
That sounds quite conclusive for the lab test.
They thought so. They looked closely at the tiny amount of residue left and concluded it was likely very low molecular weight oligomers, not persistent microplastic particles. Intertek's overall conclusion, as reported in the source, was that this technology is indeed useful for reducing microplastic pollution and preventing the accumulation of plastic waste in the environment.
And the sources also reel off a list of other endorsements or positive reviews.
They do. It seems intended to show broader scientific and environmental validation. They mentioned Geordie Labs in the U.S. finding the science scientifically sound.
Okay.
Two academics in Brazil, Professor Telmo Ojeda and engineer Fernando Figueiredo, are cited as confirming the propositions are supported by evidence. A Brazilian environmental NGO, the Fund Verbest Institute, apparently endorsed it as a viable solution for escape plastic, complementing other strategies.
So support from different sectors.
Seems so. Also, Lambton Manufacturing Innovation Center in Canada verified a paper confirming the distinction. Conventional oxo-degradable creates microplastics. This oxo-biodegradable type does not. And CIQA in Mexico is also listed as having endorsed it.
So, based on the sources, there seems to be a body of scientific work and external validation supporting the claims made for the technology.
That's certainly the picture painted by the materials we reviewed. A consistent scientific narrative backed by testing and various reviews.
Okay, so if the science is presented as being solid, let's talk about the real-world context. Policy, industry reactions, and any confusion mentioned in the sources.
Yeah, this is interesting. The sources repeatedly point to what they call a major blind spot in the circular economy policies of many governments.
Which is?
The lack of a clear, effective strategy for dealing with that plastic, which, despite all best efforts, does escape collection and ends up loose in the environment. The focus is almost entirely on collection, recycling, reuse.
All good things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But they argue there's no plan B for the stuff that gets away. And as the Switzerland example showed, that can still be a substantial amount, which then becomes persistent microplastic pollution.
Yet some countries have mandated this technology.
Yes, the sources list several, mainly in the Middle East. The UAE, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Yemen, Bahrain, where D2W technology is apparently compulsory for many common plastic applications.
But elsewhere, particularly Europe, there seems to be confusion.
Significant confusion, according to these sources. They pin it on the failure to distinguish between the older oxo-degradable plastics, which just fragmented and were rightly criticized, and this newer generation oxo-biodegradable D2W type, which is designed for full biodegradation.
And that confusion has had consequences.
They argue it's led to misguided regulatory approaches, sometimes even giving the impression the technology is banned. Mm. The sources frame this as a serious detriment to environmental protection efforts because it hinders the use of what they present as a viable solution for escape plastic, effectively allowing that plastic to keep accumulating.
What about the mainstream plastic industry itself? How do the sources describe its stance?
The portrayal is one of largely focusing on the status quo, continuing with conventional plastics, promoting recycling efforts, which, again, are necessary but don't solve the escaped plastic issue, and generally not engaging deeply with solutions like D2W, specifically for the uncollected waste stream.
So, sort of sticking to the traditional circular economy model for collected waste, but not addressing the leakage.
That's the implication in the sources. They reiterate that recycling alone, no matter how efficient, simply cannot capture the plastic that's already dispersed widely in the environment. And that's the specific niche D2W is designed for.
Okay, let's try to wrap this up. To recap our deep dive, based only on the source material we've looked at today, they present microplastics as fundamentally a problem of persistence. Conventional plastic breaks down into persistent fragments because it doesn't properly biodegrade in the open environment.
Right. And while vital standard solutions like reduce, reuse, recycle, and waste management improvements can't in reality deal with the significant amounts of plastic that inevitably escape collection systems and get lost into nature.
And into that gap, the sources position D2W technology. It's presented, with backing from the cited studies and endorsements, as a specific, scientifically designed mechanism intended only for that escaped plastic stream.
Yeah, the claim is it enables that specific plastic to first degrade rapidly via oxidation, triggered and sustained by a catalyst, and then be fully biodegraded by naturally occurring microbes in the open environment.
Preventing the long-term buildup of those persistent microplastics.
Exactly.
So the core idea presented here is really about having a kind of scientific insurance policy, a fail-safe, for the plastic litter that will inevitably happen, transforming it from a decades-long persistent problem into something that nature's own recycling systems can actually handle.
Okay, so here's the final thought, drawing strictly from what we've discussed from these sources. If the scientific case presented for this technology addressing escape plastic is as robust as these materials suggest, what are the real-world consequences of the policy confusion and industry inertia that the sources also describe? What does that mean for our actual ability to tackle this pervasive microplastic problem comprehensively?